get this straight. If the indictment is, and I have seen you say this, that crossfire releases everything, as I said in the intro, to left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left.
Stop.
Why do we have to fight?
Why do you argue?
We're in bad shape, fellas. We need help from the media, and they're hurting us. You're doing theater when you should be doing debate.
You're listening to Under Surveillance, WLEW's biweekly show on popular culture, politics, and the relationship between mass media and public opinion. I'm your host, Kevin Fulham, and every second and fourth Wednesday mornings, I'll be joined by a series of guests as we take a look at everything from the makeup of the Supreme Court to upcoming elections and to how social and political climates impact our view of the future in film and television. Under Surveillance is broadcast on WLEW, a listener-supported community radio. And for more information or to listen to archive shows, visit www.undersurveillance.org. Today on Under Surveillance, the conclusion of a two-part discussion on American teenagers in cinema. While many people think of a traditional teen movie as a scatterbrained comedy in the mold of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, American Pie, or the new Superbad, in this half of the conversation, we'll look at teenage-oriented films depicting more serious themes, from the alienation and uncertainty seen in American Beauty and Ghost World to the decadence of the much-maligned Kids. My guest is Tim Sherry, who is the director of film and video studies at the University of Oklahoma and the author of the book Generation Multiplex. That's up next on Under Surveillance.
You mentioned somewhere in your book that, you're talking about careers. What do we do after graduation? That what's now considered, or was 30 years ago considered to be a teen film, in terms of the age of the main characters, that's really extended into college now, because now we have so many more people who are attending college. That's just an extension of high school life.
That's part of the Generation X phenomenon that got tagged back around the early 90s, but the fact of the matter is that we've had an increasing number of young people going to college, and as a result, that has given at least some sense of an elongation to being young and being youthful. Still, our culture finds it shameful to live with your parents for too long, even though many young people did that into their 20s, well before the 70s and the 60s, that wasn't all that rare. I think if you really look at the statistics, there's this misperception that everyone either finished high school at 18 and got married at 19 or went to war. And there have been, obviously, with World War I, World War II, and to some degree with Vietnam, there have been some cycles of that. But the average age of marriage, of course, has been getting older, and a lot of young people yet were still not getting married that young back in the 50s and 60s. The average age then was maybe 22 to 24. Now it's around 27. That's not that much older. And yet more people are going to college and more people are enjoying their youth in a different way, while the culture tells them that's problematic. You know, that to hang on to your youthful ability to either live off your parents or enjoy some of their income or not care so much about your actual career path, that's somehow shameful. And I find that quite curious in the demographics at large. I don't know that our movies are addressing that as well as they should, but we nonetheless have a fascination with it, and we have a lot of fun criticizing it in the movies.
My name is Kevin Fulham, and I'm joined today by Tim Sherry, who's the Director of Film and Video Studies at the University of Oklahoma. And we're talking today about American teens in cinema and how various themes have evolved in the teen film genre over the last few decades. And we were talking about how you so rarely see the negative consequences of teen sex portrayed in films, such as pregnancy, such as disease.
Yes.
And you mentioned Fast Times at Ridgemont High. That was, I think, one of the only films where you said that they were addressing an abortion. There's a film that came out in the mid-90s called Kids. And it came out, I remember it received a lot of controversy when it was released, because also I think it was put up by Touchstone, which was a division of Disney. I know Disney got in a lot of hotter water for this. And it was a film that was very graphic, especially at that time. It was certainly not a comedy. It was a drama about kids who were more or less living on the streets and engaging in drug use and very promiscuous. What was your take on Kids?
Well, I have numerous problems with kids, especially as the years go on and Larry Clark continues to make more films just like it. The film purports to be some kind of social documentary examination of young teenagers, or I guess teenagers between about 13 and 16 in New York City, and how at least two of the main male characters are going about their day, one by deflowering young girls and the other by drinking as much beer as he possibly can. And it seems to be, not only by its title, Simply Being Kids, but by its style, trying to make the case that this is the way young people today actually are. And the fact of the matter is extremely few young people go around spreading HIV, deflowering virgins as a contest, and drinking, as in the case of the Casper character, played by Justin Pierce, drinking somewhere along the line of about 30 beers in a single day. These are really extreme, exploitative images of young people, and yet the critics ate it up. The critics issued so many reviews that said, this is a wake-up call, this is something to be concerned about, and I found it so absolutely reactionary and so absurd that the adult population of critics, at least, would find the film at all remotely realistic when it's a really extreme portrait of young people involved in all manner of, sexual crime, murder. They beat a kid to death halfway through the film, and no one seems to care. And they do all manner of drugs and so on. And then Larry Clark went on to make Bully and most recently Ken Park, and those films feature teens and scenes of absolute depravity and sexual threesomes, extreme abuse, what I think many people would call extreme, sexual perversions. And he's been able to make these films and get them released, and no one seems to be raising a storm about them like they do when now and then a film is made that depicts a certain ethnic group, a religious group, in a somewhat negative way. These are films that depict minors in a very extremely negative way, and yet he's able to continue making these films, and the advocates of young people just aren't rising up to say, let's stop this. Of course, it would be different if these films made more money, if they were more prominent, but the fact that they're made, the fact that they feature underage teenage nudity and sexual activity, murder and violence in the extreme, just makes me wonder. I sound like a conservative in saying that, I know, and I'm not, but I just can't help but wonder why a film like Kids in 95 is still being followed by films like Ken Park 10 years later.
How about a film like Traffic, which came out about 6-7 years ago?
Sure, 2000.
Yeah, 2000. Steven Soderbergh, I believe.
Right, and that had the very prominent role of Erica Christensen as a drug-addicted teenage girl,
yes.
And she ends up being abused and exploited, and her father is supposed to be a drug czar for the government, and on top of a lot of the national and international policies around drugs until he realizes that he can't control his own daughter at home. I found that film at least a little bit more compelling, because I think that quite often young people who do come from wealth and come from protective circumstances probably get in trouble, and obviously young people from working class and less protective backgrounds also get in trouble. But the film doesn't go out of its way to show Erica Christensen naked and abused and somehow perversely enjoying the downfall of her life. She's truly a troubled young girl, and I think that those kinds of films might be quite valuable to teenagers themselves. And I think that teenagers would do well to see films in which young people contract diseases or contract problems from extreme behavior. At the same time, who can blame your average teenager for wanting to avoid that and going to see a movie like Superbad, where the only consequences are a few, cuts and bruises,
Sure. Well, Superbad's a comedy, so we're going to Superbad to have a good time. It would be a real downer if one of the characters, had walked away with getting someone pregnant or having a disease .
But so, in the film, you think back to some of the other big teen movies of past years. Dirty Dancing is a rather heavy drama in some ways. One woman gets, well, young woman, and she's supposed to be obviously in her early 20s, gets pregnant, and baby has to confront her father over her love of dancing, and it's made kind of grave by the fact that it's set in the 60s and it's supposed to be a conservative era and conservative parents, but the aspect of morality in that film is still quite heavy, and somehow audiences of the late 80s, especially young audiences, loved it. Same with Titanic in the late 90s. So few people recognize that film as a teen film, and it's really about two teenagers, Rose and Jack. She's 17, he's maybe at most 20, and it's a teenage love story, and they consummate their relationship, and coincidentally, during that time, the iceberg hits the boat, and everyone is going to have to pay for it. But I think that that film was made so popular and so successful because young people went to see it again and again and found such a connection with the tragedy of that love story that wasn't 20th century, very end of the 20th century, but it wasn't contemporary. It was free of concerns about disease. He was liberating her from this repressive marriage, and she was discovering her true self. And I think the industry would do much better to try to find those kinds of youthful dramas that so many of us fantasize about or at one time wanted to connect with and just haven't been able to. Notebook from a few years ago was a good example. Back in the 80s, Peggy Sue Got Married. Even Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which was more of a comedy. But, you know, there's these comedy-drama intersections where we really appreciate that youthful sense of discovery and longing at a dramatic level that's not made exploitative and base.
And I think the interesting thing with Titanic is it's a teen film, but it's a period piece as well. I mean, it seems like a special challenge on one hand, but at the other hand, you don't have to worry about keeping or making sure that you're up to date with current lingo.
Oh, sure. Well, it's always been curious to me that James Cameron won, I think it was a dozen Oscars for that film, or the film won a dozen Oscars itself, but it didn't even get a nomination for script. And I think it might have been because the writers of the Academy felt that the script wasn't all that challenging. And you're right, the nuances of lingo and of contemporary talk are they're not nearly as sensitive. Of course, we should, as historians, think about how precise we should be with the lingo and the talk of a certain era if we're going to make a period film, but it doesn't seem like most people care about missing the lingo of, say, the 19-teens compared to missing the lingo of the 2000-teens or 1990s or whatever decade we're in now.
You mentioned before some landmark films, American Pie. Also, we talked a little bit about Election. How about other landmark teen films, you know, going back over the last few decades? Which are some that you might recommend?
Well, I have a distinction between what I'd recommend and what I think are important, because I think, as I've said for about 20 years now, there's truly a difference between films you like and films you know are important.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of my students will see Citizen Kane, and they'll recognize it as important, and I can explain why the story, the cinematography, the sound are all of a very, very high caliber, and yet they don't like it as a movie. And they would much rather watch something like, say, you know, an Austin Powers film or one of the new James Bond movies. But I would say, in terms of teen film, that in past years, the most important and the most valuable films have been those that have challenged the perceptions of young people without, you know, pandering to the base exploitative level of young people being stupid. And I like that Superbad wasn't entirely built around the stupidity of the characters. I just don't think that they achieved very much. I don't think that they learned very much, but at least it wasn't entirely built around their own stupidity. They definitely have a sense of spirit and affection for each other and for other people. Going back a few more years, I was actually quite impressed with Can't Hardly Wait in 1998. I was reminded of that in watching Superbad, because it's another film built around the big senior year party, and one guy wants to confess his love to a girl, and everyone takes her for granted because she's just so pretty, and he dislikes her supposedly for who she is. And that's what the John Hughes films of the 80s were also supposed to be about.
Say Anything, sure, has the same kind of plot.
And Say Anything in 89, which falls in the middle there, you know, in Say Anything, Lloyd Dobler, the John Cusack character, says, I'm going to date Diane Court. I think she's cool. And that's about all he needs to go on. And she realizes quite soon that his pursuit of her is really sincere. And that's very impressive to her. And his friends tell him, you know, well, she's out of your reach. You know, you can't achieve this. And if anything, a lot of these teen films, which is what makes them so endearing to us, a lot of these teen films are just simply trying to tell us not only be yourself, but don't resist reaching for not only who you might like, who you might love, what you might achieve, but go for it. You know, don't just resist it, go for it. And if we didn't, then we'd all end up like the villainous or angry characters of so many yuppie films that look back and say, I never had this, and I'm angry. And, you know, we don't get very far with life in that way. And that made for a great many dramas throughout the 80s and 90s, the angry yuppie that didn't get what usually a male character, what he wanted because he was so focused on business, focused on school, focused on college or his law degree or whatever. And most of these teen films are saying, go ahead and take a chance, and if you don't, at least, you know, you've tried. And
sure.
I appreciate most of them on that level.
And Back to the Future certainly has that same kind of message, that same story.
Well, it does. I mean, I like, for instance, Kids, I don't think was saying take a chance on going out and committing a lot of crimes or deflowering a lot of girls in one day. That wasn't taking a chance. That wasn't doing anything progressive. In a film like Back to the Future, which was 10 years, just exactly 10 years earlier than Kids, I think that the message was a little bit more complicated by the fact that you had a very lucrative industry at that time looking to tap into the youth market. It was 1985. You know, Hughes had been doing well with his films, and the teen sex comedies and the teen horror films had been coming out. And here was Michael J. Fox, hot off of Family Ties. And they also, of course, wanted to appeal to 30 and 40-something people in the audiences by looking back at the 50s and 60s and saying, wow, wasn't it great back in the day? Isn't it great today? And trying to pull that all together. And that's why a film like Titanic could also work fairly well, although it referenced a much earlier time period. These films that connect people to their youthful experiences and that try to reinvigorate them with their ambitions and their goals, or at least their hopes of when they were young, tend to do quite well. And I think that films that are fixated on the thrill of the moment and the chase at hand often end up kind of falling short, which is again where I thought Superbad kind of went wrong. I didn't think it had a sense of destiny or legacy.
There's another film that I think touched on that kind of cross-generational type of reach, Pleasantville, which I think was an excellent movie. It came out about 10 years ago or so?
98,
okay. With Tobey Maguire, and also Reese Witherspoon was in that as well, too.
Reese Witherspoon in some of her earlier days, if you will. Yeah, and she was in a fantastic teen movie, which most people won't have heard of, but it was called Freeway from around 1994. So she had been playing teen roles for a few years at that point. And Pleasantville very much talked about just what I've been saying and what you're saying too, the intersection of youth and adult, the longing to kind of be free, liberated from your adult entrapments, having to work, having to follow certain social codes, and wanting to simply go back to being exploratory and being celebratory. And you know, the Joan Allen character in that film is the one that really embodies all of that, because she realizes she's in a, not a bad marriage, it's not an abusive marriage, but it's a stifling marriage. It's a marriage that doesn't fulfill her. And the artist, played by Jeff Daniels, of course, is able to awaken in her so many of these colorful, literally colorful experiences. And that really interesting distinction between Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon in terms of, you know, are you going toward the conservative or toward the expressive? Are you going toward the safe or the radical, I thought was quite a moment of political confrontation for the late 90s. And if you ask me, you know, looking at it from a political perspective in terms of young people, I can't help but wonder what a lot of them would think about these films in terms of their politics, because a lot of them have messages, many of them, I think most of them have messages about being exploratory, being liberal-minded, even though the safer route, obviously, is more reassuring.
American Beauty.
American Beauty?
Yeah, that is something I no one would think of that as a teen film. But clearly, I think, I mean, you have three of the main characters who are teenagers.
And I certainly thought of it as a teen film. With Wes Bentley and Thora Birch and Mia, what's her name?
Mina Savari?
Mina Savari,
yes.
Absolutely. You've got two girls and a guy, and one girl's clearly, you know, sort of going after or lusting for the other guy, but Mina Savari plays this character who acts as if she's old beyond her years, when in the end we realize she's just been lying the entire time. And that's a film, that's one of the few films, as we were talking about earlier, in terms of parents, that really does involve the parents and their effect on the children in quite a direct way. And it seems as if the formula in that film is that because Thora Birch's character is not entirely sure of herself because she's so sensitive, and Mina Savari's character is so overly confident, that the parents have a direct role in how they are going through their lives and how they are going to turn out. And I think that with Mina Savari's character in that film, you have the portrait of the confused young woman, late teenage girl, who has been playing into the act of what the media and what I think a lot of adult culture think youthful sexuality is about, and clearly they don't know that much, which was one aspect of Superbad that I did like. I think most teenagers still don't know that much about sexuality, and they still could be given a much better education about it overall, but that gets tied up in political concerns around our school districts, and
sure,
if we give kids contraception, or if we tell them too much about babies and other facts of life.
I think another element in American Beauty, you also had the fact that Kevin Spacey and Annette Bening, I believe, were in this loveless marriage, and they both lived separate lives. So married only in name only, and the effect that this is having on the daughter, and in contrast with Thora Birch's relationship with Wes Bentley.
Wes Bentley.
I think what I'm getting at in some sense, too, is that people think of like a teen film usually as a comedy, not necessarily a film like American Beauty. Maybe that's because of the fact that American Beauty does appeal to people of all ages, mm-hmm. as opposed to just the teen audience.
Well, that's one of the dilemmas I've had in being a teen film historian and writing books about mm-hmm. the genre, is so often not only have my fellow academics dismiss the genre as just being fluff, you know, just teen movies, as if action movies or gangster movies are necessarily all that much more valuable because they're about adults, but I think quite often they don't recognize how many of the so-called great movies of many years are about teenagers, and that's why I bring up films like Titanic or American Beauty and so on, Rebel Without a Cause. These are films that are really about teenage characters, even though adults have a presence in the film as well. A teenage film doesn't simply need to be built around entirely teenage characters.
One of my favorite films is also another film with Thora Birch called Ghost World.
Oh, sure, with Scarlett Johansson.
With Scarlett Johansson, yeah, one of her first roles, based off the comic books.
Daniel Close,
yep. Which I read the comic books after I saw the film, and I was much more impressed with the film, which usually it happens the other way around, that you're much more impressed with the literary counterpart. But these are two teenagers where you really don't see parental involvement, although Steve Buscemi, playing a obviously a character much older than Thora Birch, and mm-hmm. quasi-love interest as well, too. There you have, okay, these kids have finished high school, what do we do next? And they're kind of a little bit restless. You have Scarlett Johansson wanting to go and kind of get focused and try to make a career, where Thora Birch is still pretty much in limbo.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you think of Ghost World?
Well, I thought it was a little bit too clever for its own good in some ways. I liked the the characters played by Thora Birch and Scarlett Johansson, but I think ultimately it didn't quite know what to do with its own attitude. You know, it seemed to be slick or cynical for the purpose of being cynical. And ultimately, when Thora Birch or her character, you know, gets on the bus and just goes away at the end, which is exactly how it ends in the comic novel, I thought, well, I guess that's just what Close was trying to get at, is that she doesn't quite know what she wants to do other than get out of town. She's been, you know, young and tied down, and she's going to go off and find something else. And if I was a teenager when I saw that film, I would have wanted something more. And I guess on some level, even as someone now in my 40s, I still want something more. But I wouldn't call it a bad movie. I wouldn't call it a movie that made these young women cynical to the point of being self-abusive, or cynical to the point of being a blight on society. They just really don't entirely know what they want, and I think that's characteristic of a lot of young people today. That's one of the great dramas of youth, is what do you want when you become a so-called adult, and when do you become an adult, and what point do you get to achieve adult goals?
My name is Kevin Fulham, and I've been talking with Tim Sherry, who is the Director of Film and Video Studies at the University of Oklahoma. We've been talking about American teens and cinema over the past couple of shows. Thank you so much for your time, Tim. I appreciate having you on the show. Wonderful to hear your insight.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's been great to talk and just go on length about my ideas. I really appreciate your interest.
For Tim Sherry, my name is Kevin Fulham, and you've been listening to Under Surveillance on WLUW. For more information or to listen to archived shows, visit www.undersurveillance.org. That's www.undersurveillance.org.